Blog Talk Radio.
Om Shabbat.
And give me just a moment here. We have a little bit of shift in our normal schedule of opening here. This is Jessie Ann Nichols George. You're listening to Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. Thank you for joining me here tonight on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. My name is Jessie Ann Nichols-George, and I'm your hostess this evening. And the music you were listening to there at the beginning of the show is, there were two songs actually, Yoga and Meditation, and also The Renunciate Inventor from India, both by the Ananda Ensemble and from the movie Finding Happiness, which is what we are going to be taking a look at tonight. Welcome to everybody that's listening in to us tonight, those that are returning, and we welcome you back here, and also those that are joining us for the very first time. We are streaming live in three additional places. We are streaming live through TalkStream Live, StreamFinder, and Penn, also known as Pair Encounters Network, and I welcome everyone listening through those channels, as well as those people that are catching our archived shows, catching our podcast at tunein.com, podcast.com, and iTunes, as well as the YouTube version that is coming through. So I welcome all of you, whether you're listening live or in the archives tonight. Here at Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, I look at different ways that compassion exists in our lives, how to remove our blocks, resistances, frustrations, and more. In some weeks, what I do is discuss different aspects of how compassion's in our life, how it affects the different areas of life. Some weeks I'm doing more exercises and practical implementations. Last week was a great example of that, where I was doing some work with clearing with the angels, and we did some exercises there. So if you missed that show, you want to go back and catch that in our archives. And many times I also have guests on the show, and tonight is no exception to that because I've got some incredible guests that you're going to find very, very interesting that are going to be sharing their lifestyle and an incredible film that has been put out called Finding Happiness. And then also I highlight different musical artists along the way, and that has included last year Stephen Halpern, Peter Cater, Jill Mattson along the way, Claire Hedin has been highlighted along the way, Bruce Ciccarelli, which we had on just not too long ago, maybe a month or so ago, and Bruce's work, you might remember, if you missed that show, go back and catch it. All of his work is available for free. It's his gift to the universe. And in my own work, what I do is I focus on helping people find and use compassion in their everyday lives. I've created the Genesis Clearing Statement, and if you've missed that, you can catch that in the archived shows. I've authored four books, the most recent ones being You, Me, Life Dreams, and its companion workbook, which is based on relationships, and then Activating Compassion and also its companion workbook. In addition, I've created the Compassion Tour, a multi-state nationwide tour, which includes workshops, retreats, seminars, book signings, and fundraising events. And you can follow any of the live events to register for at jessieannnicholsgeorge.eventbrite.com. And just a reminder, if you enjoy the show this evening, definitely make sure that you tell your friends, your family, you know, share it. Click that share button and share it through Facebook or LinkedIn, whatever your social media favorite is out there, because I always find that when I'm sharing something, it gets somebody else inspired. And I find that almost always there's somebody out there that goes, man, I was just having this conversation about this type of lifestyle, or I was just having this conversation about this very topic, or I really needed to know this. So you never know whose life you might change in that process. And they can always, again, listen to it in our archives. They can come back here to Blog Talk. They can catch it through my page, my webpage, which is jessieannnicholsgeorge1.com. And then if you just go to my page on the Main Street Universe tab, I keep all the archived shows there. Again, they can go to iTunes, tunein.com, or on my YouTube channel. So lots of options depending on what their preference is. And before we get started tonight, those that have listened in before, you know I like to delve into a little book called The 72 Names of God. It's by Yehuda Berg, and Yehuda is a Kabbalah master. But I like Yehuda's concepts because what he does is he takes those larger concepts, he brings it into everyday language that applies to our everyday life. And to me, I think that that's, no matter what the belief system is, that is a key thing for us to reach out to people, for us to join together as a human race. We need to see it in our own terms. And so let's take a look and see what we've got tonight for the topic. And this, too, I put up within usually about an hour after the show ends. And you can go back and look at it throughout the week on my page of the Main Street Universe tab on my website. And again, that's JessieAnnNicholsGeorge1.com. So let's see what we have for a message this week. And we've got eradicate plague. This is going to be interesting because I think my guests tonight, I think their philosophy and their lifestyle and the things that they're involved with are actually working on doing this very thing in our society. So the first part of the message here on this is, Kabbalists tell us that the concept of plague has a wider meaning than the biblical hailstones, frogs, and darkness. The plagues that appear in our generation are far more subtle and deceptive. No need to feel paralyzed and hopeless. We can remove plagues at their seed. And the insight he provides on this is, today, 4,000 teens started smoking. In the next 3 minutes, a woman will be diagnosed with breast cancer. One-third of the world is now infected with tuberculosis. In the next 12 months, over 180,000 men will be afflicted with prostate cancer. Before finishing elementary school, the average American child will have seen 8,000 murders on TV. In the next 60 seconds, 12,000 tons of carbon dioxide will be pumped into the atmosphere. In the next 60 minutes, 1,800 children will die of malnutrition and hunger. By tomorrow, 25,000 people will die of water shortage or contamination. Over 25 million Americans purchase nicotine products. One in 1,500 college students is HIV positive. One out of every four females has an eating disorder. In the next 12 months, approximately 13 million people will be victims of crime. Today, if a dozen people in a single location suddenly fall ill, the media declares an epidemic. But when more than 500,000 people die from smoking-related illnesses in a single year, no one calls it a plague. There are two reasons for this. The deaths were spread over time and space. They occurred over the course of a year, and they took place in different parts of the world. The influence of time and space blinds us to the reality of the modern-day plagues that lurk among us. This name is both the antidote and the preventative medicine for the root cause of all plagues that afflict our world. And the meditation that he gives on this is, think about smoking, cancer, AIDS, pollution, nuclear waste, depression, heart disease, hatred, or any other plague that infects the world. Now summon forth light to wipe out these plagues at their root. And I think this is a big thing. And at the end of this, he mentioned aspects of hate and disease. And the guests that I have on tonight, they're striving to develop a world that, and influence a world that is based on health, healthy body, healthy mind, healthy emotions, healthy soul. And they're based on living in a world that's based on love. And I think that that's something definitely for us to keep in mind when we think about this, because it's those lifestyles that do eradicate the plagues that we live with on a day-to-day basis. Now, again, the common name of God that is listed here is Eradicate Plague, and the formal name on this is Nun Lamed Kof. Again, that's Nun Lamed Kof. So great little message just to keep in mind for the week. Again, that's on my page of the Main Street Universe tab on my website, JessieAnnNicholsGeorge, thenumber1.com, and you can go back and read that throughout the week. Now, a little thought here to get us going before I bring my guest on tonight and before we take a little break here. What comes to mind when you think about communal living? How would you feel about sharing everything with a group of others? Is living in a self-supportive environment something that would work for you? Oftentimes when we talk of communal living, our first thought runs to poor villages and third world cultures or to indigenous groups living in the outback somewhere. However, as more groups surface that focus on sustainability, we are finding more and more people looking at this as a feasible option for themselves, their family, and to heal the environment. For others, It is a way to live a lifestyle that allows them to honor and share their beliefs and customs with others. For so many, they resist the idea of living in close quarters with others and not being in the heart of city, action, and commercialism. Ironically, people tend to feel a sense of security in crime-filled, noisy, invasive places. The unknown fear of nature is greater than the known fear of possible violence and attack. The concept for many is that communal lifestyle is for those peace-loving hippies and religious freaks. The film Finding Happiness does take a look at one aspect of a type of communal living as it pertains to the Ananda community. Now, that might bring some resistance initially, but in looking at the members of such a community, you would never know them to be different when out in the everyday streets. Oh, that is, except for their peaceful, calm, accepting, and happy demeanor. That might really stand out in some places. I like the example of this community because they have been operating for a very long time, long before this became a conscious way of living for people to consider. They grow a lot of their own food. They have their own homes to live in. They live in outside beautiful places. There is time to honor mind, body, spirit every day. They place a strong emphasis on education and have developed a school system that really fosters growth and evolvement in a loving way and excels what most public schools are offering. When we look at this type of lifestyle, are we really that far off of it in most areas anyways? We actually have many urban versions of this already in existence, only our urban versions are more costly, less loving, non-supportive, and highly dictated in what you can and can't do. What I'm talking about? Just look at any development tract, which exists in almost every city. They have homeowner fees. Everything must be maintained a certain way with rigid bylaws and standards for existing in that community. There's no real leeway to be yourself and imprint your own style. Is it really more acceptable just because it's in a city, or is it any less communal? Many of these also have their own parks, schools, etc. in them. What if you got to choose how you wanted to contribute in your community without having to worry about finances? What if food and shelter were provided for you? How would you feel being able to honor body, mind, and spirit each and every day in a balanced way? How would you feel having a beautiful location to live in with clean air, fresh food, and support from others? How would you feel about this type of lifestyle? This week, our guests are focusing on a component of compassion that is related to the aspect in my books of creating a new world. And this reminds us that we can create any kind of world to live in that we would like to. And in working together, we can truly make a difference. I'm going to take a short break, and when we return, I will have Davey and Jyotish Novak with us, and they are going to be sharing their connection with the film Finding Happiness and their life in the Ananda community. And the song that I have tonight for you during our break is called Emerald Isle. It's done by the Ananda Ensemble, and it is, I had something else I was going to say in there. The Ananda Ensemble, and it's from the film Finding Happiness. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Thank you.
Come here while I sing you of emerald hills, of valleys and meadows so fair, that all who have seen them have carried away memories in their hearts, friend, like the lilacs of May. Oh, my song is the story of the lilacs of May. My song is the story of deer on the hill, of larks that soar seeking the sun, of nightingales lifting the curtain of night, as with music they bring down heaven's blessing of light. Oh, my song is a story of God's blessing of light. Come join me in singing of that emerald isle, of flowers that like jewels best sprinkle the leaves, of waterfall eager to embrace the white sea, as we with our Maker united would be, as we with our Maker reunited would be.
Welcome back. You are listening to Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, and my name is Jessie Ann Nichols-George. I'm your hostess this evening, and the song that you were just listening to is called Emerald Isle. It's by the Ananda Ensemble from the film Finding Happiness. And I would like to go ahead and bring on my guests tonight. I have with me Devi and Jodesh Novak from talking with us on the film Finding Happiness, which was filmed on location at the Ananda communities in California, Italy, and India. It follows the story of a young woman spending a week in the community, and she meets several people who, in their own unscripted words, share their story of moving from idealism to inner transformation. They share not only the experience of the Ananda community, but also universal truths that allow one to transform their life. The story originates in 1920s when Paramahansa Yogananda arrived on America's shores. Yogananda's mission included two key points that powerfully influenced his young disciple, J. Donald Walters, later renowned as Swami Kriyananda. First, personal change starts within. Second, Our environment greatly influences our search for happiness. Yogananda envisioned places where people could put high principles into action, world brotherhood colonies. Swami Kriyananda founded the first community near Nevada City, California, in the beautiful foothills of the Sierra Nevada. And I can vouch that it is truly beautiful. I have been through the area, and it is gorgeous there. And we will be looking at the lifestyle of these communities tonight and the story, Finding Happiness. And you can learn more about this work by going to www.findinghappinessmovie.com and also ananda.org, or I should say ananda.org. So that's ananda.org. And I'm going to go ahead and open up the mic tonight. It's coming on here. And Debbie and Jodish, it is an absolute pleasure to welcome you to Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour.
Thank you, Jesse Ann. Nice to be here.
Yes, it's wonderful to share some time with you.
And, you know, I know that you've got so many things to share with us. And I have to say, you know, the movie Finding Happiness, when I watched it, it is so touching to the heart, and it really made me rethink so many different things about the way I live my own life and about the way society is in general and the various ideals. And I think sometimes this is something that people have put into some odd categories throughout the years, and yet I think it's paving an amazing path for this world. I would love for you to start off and share with us a little bit about your journey. How did you come into being associated with Ananda?
Well, I'll start, Jesse. And I was always interested in the question of consciousness, and that led me to study psychology in college. But psychology, especially as it was taught in the early 1960s, I graduated from University of Minnesota. It really didn't touch very much on the question of consciousness. It talked about abnormal psychology. It talked about experimentation with rats and stimulus and response and all of that. But I was interested in something much more than that. And it wasn't until after college when I discovered the wonderful book Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda that laid out for me a vision of what the potential of consciousness was that not only excited me but expanded my own sense of what the possibilities were. And then shortly after that, I met a direct disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda, Swami Kriyananda, and became his disciple. Now, that book, Autobiography of a Yogi, is one of certainly the 10 most important movers and shakers in the world of consciousness in the West. It's a perennial bestseller. Almost every spiritual teacher has read it and refers to it. It's really groundbreaking. And so I had a chance to study with Swami Kriyananda. I learned meditation with him and yoga postures and a lot of work on attitude and proper diet. In other words, how to live a healthy life on all levels, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual levels. And then two or three years after meeting him, I became his assistant, and then the starting founding of the first Ananda community in 1969 started, and so I was one of the early founding members of that of the Ananda community, which has now spread around the globe. We have 10 different communities in a number of different countries now.
I think this is powerful, and you talk about that book, and I say it is universal, and it is something that has a huge impact on a lot of different, I would say, people who look at spiritual practices. I actually had somebody show me that book when I was a child. And so when I was listening to you say that, I remember there was a park that I used to play at, and there were a couple of people that worked there, and one person in particular, and I remember him taking that book out and showing me.
Over the years, we've met countless people who have had the course of their life absolutely changed by the reading of that book. And it's one of the great gifts to the world of for light and consciousness that is available, makes the realm of expanded consciousness absolutely available and real to the reader.
I agree, and I think that is a powerful place. Now, so you then came on and you started opening these communities. Like you said, it's now built up to, you said, 10 communities, and I know that each one holds its own specialness. I'm hoping that, you know, I know, too, that you had some various things at the beginning or early in the years of the community. I remember there was a big fire that hit in that area.
Yes, Jesse, and in 1975, this was 6 years into the community's history, we had been building up gradually till that point. We had 23 homes and a market and some businesses and dairy and gardens and so different activities. And then in July 29th, 1976, we were hit by this big forest fire. And it was very interesting because later we found out that the cause of it was some county equipment that was shooting sparks out into the dry grass. So, but it caught fire and the dry grass along the highway, and it burnt many, many thousands of acres. But Ananda was virtually burnt to the ground. We lost 22 of the 23 homes we had, and just everything we'd built in those first years was gone. But, you know, really the amazing thing was that we didn't, of course we lost the outward security, but the lesson that we got from that experience was that one's inner strength and one's inner security and values have to be found within. And if you have them within yourself, it doesn't matter what happens outside. It doesn't matter what you lose or what you gain or any of that. It was really a gift to us, I felt, to have seen the difference. One day you have a comfortable home and so forth, the next day it's all gone. And what's different? Are you different? No, you're not different. You're the same person. And then you just go on and you rebuild your life from there. So I think in this world that we live in today, there's so much instability and uncertainty and anxiety about the future. And really, if people could understand that we have to find our strength and our values within ourselves. And that's been one of the big lessons for me in living in a intentional community, a spiritual community, all these years of finding our own values within ourselves.
You make such a beautiful point with that, Debbie, and I know you had some additional things going on when that fire hit, from what I remember from the movie, and it is. And I remember you mentioning that you were living in a place that was having some flooding issues, and Judge said, well, now we don't have to worry about the flooding anymore.
right. And no, it was really wonderful to, and I think I certainly experienced it, and I imagine many, many other people in their lives have experienced it, that you have to be pushed to the kind of limits of what you think you can deal with in your life, and that's where you find your real strength. And at the time of the fire, Jyotish and I were married, and we have at that time, our first child had just been born. He was just 11 days old, and it was not an easy experience to go through. But again, it prepared me for the rest of my life. And I hope that people can understand that if they can look at the lesson, whatever happens to us in our lives, if we can look at the lessons that underlying them and gain strength and wisdom from them, that life is just, it takes so much of the anxiety out of it. No matter what happens, you can just say, there's an underlying lesson in this for me. What am I supposed to learn here?
And you're bringing up several good points with this, because there's always a lesson to learn. I think when we look at physical things, there's certainly lessons with learning how attached we are to something. And as you mentioned, it's the inside of yourself that matters. I mean, we hear about this in many belief systems that, the outside, the possessions, are not what makes the person. And I think too many people get that turned around a lot of times, where they've let their outer world define their inner world. And I can relate to your experience, because I moved to where I am now, and when I moved here, everything literally ended up in a dumpster right down to the clothes on my back. And I had everything that I had been infected by deadly mold, and so it was gone, just like that. And whether it's fire or whether you're deliberately having to get rid of it for one reason or another, as you say, it can sometimes be a little disorientating, but it's that lesson of stepping back and saying, okay, now here's my set of circumstances, what am I going to do? And we can look at it and say, now we have opportunities, now there's things that we don't have to deal with, where are we going to go? And I find that in the midst of this experience, because the two of you have lived through a lot with the Ananda community, as you say, that doesn't dictate who you are. You can still be a loving person no matter what's happening situationally. And I think this is a key lesson today, because so many people are saying, this is happening to me, that's happening to me. Great, so who are you going to be in the process of that?
Yeah, that's a very, very good attitude. You know, one way of looking at life that is extremely helpful is that, this is part of the Indian teachings, is that we draw everything that comes to us, not necessarily consciously, but there is something in our behavior patterns that is drawing to us a circumstance, a relationship, a test that is there in order for us to learn something. And sometimes there needs to be a kind of a destruction of the old before the new can begin. I do some painting, and you can't start a new painting until you have a blank canvas. And so sometimes what we think of as disaster is just cleaning off the slate and giving us a new canvas on which we can paint a different picture from what we've been painting up until that time.
And, you know, that really could be a purpose, mission statement of why these cooperative communities were formed. Our spiritual guide, Paramahansa Yogananda, as Jyotish mentioned, the author of Autobiography of a Yogi, one of the purposes that for which he came to the West was to start these World Brotherhood colonies. And he saw that this, he foresaw into the future, he predicted that the cities would become increasingly filled with crime and disease and competitiveness and disharmony. And so starting with a clean slate, getting a small group of people with shared purpose and shared ideals, withdrawing from the cities, finding land in a rural area, and not completely cutting yourself off. The Ananda Village where we live is located, as you mentioned in the introduction, in the foothills of the Sierra Nevada Mountains, about an hour and a half west of Sacramento, California. But there aren't any large cities nearby, and we're not entirely self-sufficient. We depend on many, many things from the world at large, and God bless Amazon.com, because we're in a rural area and we can order things from them. But nevertheless, psychically, we are not dependent. Psychically, there's a sense of we are creating this based on higher principles. We're not letting the mores or the fads or trends that are going on in the world determine what we're going to do, but we're going to try to interiorly, through our devotion to God, tune into His vision for a life of people coming together in harmony and respect, in higher principles and values. And Yogananda predicted that these world brotherhood colonies would be the social pattern for the new age, as people want to rediscover the worth of the individual, simplicity, harmony, peace of mind. And all of these things are reflected, I believe, in the movie Finding Happiness that was made about the Ananda community movement.
Yes, I think that high level of principles is a key thing, because many of what people have associated in the past has been, oh, this is like a cult, and, you know, they just take money from people and blah, 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 blah. And what I find interesting with the Ananda is Paramahansa Yogananda came in, and he didn't start with this huge amount of funds to do things with. He didn't start with some big fancy building while everybody else was off, you know, living in these slum conditions. And I think, you know, that speaks volumes right there. That his interest was truly from a sincere place.
Well, his whole life was based on trying to help people, and he was just such a great, great soul. But coming back to the thought that he didn't take anything for himself, he wouldn't accept money for himself. There's a story that our founder, Swami Kriyananda, tells. He was with Yogananda for the last 3.5 years of his life, and Swami Kriyananda at the time was a young man, 22 years old, and there were a number of young students or monks in the ashram of Yogananda, and one day it was a hot afternoon on a Sunday, and Yogananda said to a group of the young man, he said, wouldn't you all like to go out and get an ice cream cone? And I would like to give you some money, go out and buy an ice cream cone. And they didn't want to accept money from him because they knew that he had hardly any. And they said, no, no, master. They called him master because not that he was the master of them. He was the master of himself, and he had complete control over his emotions and actions and mindset. At any rate, they said, no, no, master, we don't want to accept money from you. And he said, no, please, please, I want to give you some money for some ice cream. And they said, no, no, no. And he said, listen, I can't keep money. I don't want to keep money. He had a little box with a few coins and bills in it, and he gave them each $1 to go out and buy some ice cream. And Swami Kriyananda took that dollar and kept it and used his own money to get the ice cream cone to honor that. But in our little museum here, we have that dollar in the museum, and it's really to remind us of the fact that Yogananda set the tone that life is much happier when you include other people in your happiness. We receive by giving to other people, and our life is much freer and much more fulfilling if we don't think about ourselves. And the less you think about yourself, the more freedom you have inwardly, and ultimately the more happiness you have.
And on a practical, for a practical example in our own lives, we mentioned this forest fire earlier that destroyed Ananda. Well, many of our other neighbors, adjacent landowners, were also burnt out in that fire. And because it was found that it was the fault of Nevada County, where we live, all of the other landowners threatened to sue the county, and they settled out of court for many millions of dollars. But our members of Ananda community contacted the Board of Supervisors and said, even though we sustained the greatest loss in this fire, we are not going to sue or threaten to sue. We came to Nevada County to give and to contribute, not to take. And that was a real turning point in our relationships with the local government, because up to that point, they were a little suspicious of us. They didn't, as you said, you know, people have kind of stereotype impressions of cults or communes or whatever. And then when, in that period of extremists, when they saw the real, you know, walking our talk, so to speak, where we were just being very altruistic in the face of very personal loss. We had no insurance, and we just rebuilt once again by our own efforts. But we didn't have any big donors or any big funding. We just worked hard and did the best we could. But, you know, again, there's a beautiful saying that is one of the foundations of the Ananda community. Our founder, Swami Kriyananda, who is our Jyotisha, for me, our personal teacher for 45 years. Swami Kriyananda passed away in April of 2013, so it's relatively recently. But he really was our teacher for all those many years, our spiritual teacher. And when he lived in India for a period of time as a young man, and he saw a saying in one of the homes of one of the Maharajas of a state of India, and that was translated, where there is adherence to truth and right action, there is victory. And we've always tried to live up to that, where if we're doing the right thing, the universe will take care of us. We don't have to run out and grab for ourselves. And, you know, it's my life, I have learned, I have lived that, and I have experienced that. I came as a young person to Ananda. I was just 22 years old, and just came with very little out of college. And yet I've had a wonderful life and had the opportunity to travel all over the world and to share spiritual teachings with others. But I've always had everything I've needed, because my thought was always, how can I serve humanity? How can I help others? Not how can I get a better car, a better house, or better vacation, or any of those things. So, you know, if we live our ideals, the universe supports us. And this isn't just theory. I have lived it and experienced it since I came to Ananda in 1969. And it's just been one of the deepest fulfillments of my life, to realize that you don't need to compromise your ideals. So often you meet young people and they've already become cynical. They've already become jaded and thinking that if you don't compromise in the world, you can't get ahead. Well, it's just simply not the truth. Maybe you'll win a one day's battle, but really, the more you can just live your ideals, the more you'll find that you have happiness and success on every level.
You know, I find that to be so true, and I mention this even in my own books of Activating Compassion, that it's like it doesn't matter how much you give, in a sense, really, because the more you give, the more you're going to get. You can't stop the receiving process when you're genuinely giving. And
exactly.
You're always going to receive more because that internal gift that you're getting back is so much more than the value of the money or the monetary aspect of things. I think that walking your talk is such a huge thing, and that's where some people kind of, they shift it. They think sometimes, I think, that they're clear in what their motives are or their intentions are, but when it comes down to really walking their talk and
yeah.
These sorts of things, and I've had people say, oh, I really want to learn how to do better in the world and make more money, and I'd use the money for this and use it for altruistic purposes, and I'm like, take all the money you want, because if I can just have my happiness, I'm good to go. You know,
yeah.
I'll find a way to survive. As you say, you know, it always comes up.
You know, so many people make the mistake of what they're really looking for is happiness. In fact, Yogananda, one of his first book, the basic theme was that everybody in the whole world is motivated by the same motivation, to be happy and to avoid pain. And the question then comes of how you define, or on a subconscious level, how you think that you're going to achieve happiness. And so many people kind of sell themselves. So they'll take a job that they hate in order to earn money that they barely are able to save any, in order to buy possessions, many of which they don't really like that much, all with the idea that these things are going to make them happy. And if they would just skip the middleman and start thinking, what is truly going to make me happy? And then work directly on their happiness, it would change everything. And the further lesson is that you begin to understand that your state of happiness and unhappiness is internal and is therefore under your own control. And possessions can't make you happy. Lack of possessions can't make you sad unless you allow them to. Money can't make you happy. Money can't make you unhappy unless you allow it to. But the real key here is to understand that our happiness is internal and therefore under our control.
And I so agree with you on that. I so agree that it absolutely is internal, and that's where a lot of people get turned around. They look to the outer pieces to make them happy, and people say, but I have no choice. I've got to pay these bills. I've got to pay that. It's amazing how many options we have when we really need to look at them, and it's amazing how much we can do without. I remember working with somebody a few years ago when I was working part-time at a resort, and he said to me, you know, I've gotten rid of my TV. I've gotten rid of, all of these electronic stuff, computers, and, I don't have all these things. He says, the only thing I have is a cell phone because I have to have a way to communicate and stuff with people, and he says, I barely use that. And he says, I've never been happier. And
mm-hmm.
I think that's the key, is most people have not been shown where that happiness really is, or they haven't been shown how to look within and make that connection. Because as we know, when we do make that connection, our heart space opens up, the love energy opens up. And again, you can't stop things from flowing in once you're in that space of love. Now, Ananda then took this life example when we look at the fire aspect that happened, and you actually had several members that left the community at that time. And I understand that you did a very interesting thing, even though that you needed to rebuild the community, you ended up giving money to the people who were leaving.
The little money that had come in donations, we decided to give it to the people that were leaving because they had no resources. They were going out into the world. And we knew that we had the underpinnings, the foundation of support in our community, in our faith, in our beliefs, in our practice of meditation. And so we didn't need to cling to those outward things. And, you know, that first Christmas after the fire, you know, so the fire was in June, and the first Christmas afterwards, we had very, very meager funds, and I had saved a little money set aside for to buy Christmas presents for others. But when we were going to go into shopping for the presents, I looked at our checkbook and I realized I had made a mistake, and we really had $10 left to our name, and that was it. And so we just said, well, we'll just buy ingredients for cookies, and we'll bake cookies for all our friends and just give them each a cookie or two. And that's what we did, and we didn't buy presents for ourselves. And, you know, it was just fine. I was so happy we could put two little chocolate chip cookies in a little baggie and with love and give it to our friends, and they didn't have much more than that themselves. And, you know, when you just stop that frenetic squirrel's cage of running around and chasing after possessions and, oh, I need this and, oh, I need that. And our son is grown now. And I asked him a few years ago, I said, because we live very simply, and I said, did you ever feel that you missed out on things? You didn't have a lot of the material possessions that other kids had? And he said, Mom, I had the best childhood. He said, I grew up among the kindest, nicest people. He said, after leaving Ananda and going off on my own in the world, I've never met people as nice and kind as they are. And I had the freedom to play in nature and to build tree houses and just explore the countryside. And so, again, I see so many parents thinking, oh, I've got to get my child the latest toy and the latest video game and the latest this and that and the other. And it makes me so sad because I think they're instilling from an early age the value into their children that you need this and that and the other to be happy, whereas living simply, just saying, this is what we can afford. I'm not going to, just because everyone else has it, I'm not going to, don't have to run out and get it. And it really produces in growing children the consciousness of, again, finding happiness in themselves, in the simple fun of imagination and creativity and friendship and so forth, and not basing your values on what you have or what you wear. And I grew up in a middle-class suburbs and a very materialistic community, and everyone looked at what labels you had on your clothes and what model of car you had. And I couldn't wait to get out of there because I knew that those weren't real values.
And, you know, I have, like, questions going everywhere that I want to take from that, which is, you know, okay, I'm gonna go in one direction first.
Okay.
Which is people have this concept that if I go and join a community like this, I can't have anything. I have to give up everything, and I'm going to live in these really deprived conditions, and everybody is going to know every piece of my business, and I'll have no privacy. And I know that that's not true in Ananda.
No, it's certainly not. And, you know, that's just people's anxieties kind of being projected. One of the things we've done at Ananda is to accept the fact that every individual should have the right to make their own choices. And unlike the typical idea of a commune where everything's held in common, the only thing we hold in common is our land together. And in that way, we share that, but people can build a large house, a small house, they can rent a house, they can own a house, they can start their own businesses, take their own income from those businesses. We have many community businesses. So what we've tried to do is to create lots of options, individual options for people, because people aren't little cookie-cutter examples of a mold that you everybody looks alike. Everybody is so individual. Every fingerprint is individual, what to speak of the consciousness and background and patterns that people have. So we try to create the openness for people to make their own choices. What we really work on is to try to help with the practice of meditation, with sharing together, with compassion, with education, to help people lift their consciousness. When I say lift their consciousness, what I really mean is to expand it so that they see the importance of other people's welfare as well as their own. They see the needs of the world as well as my needs. But once you lift the consciousness, then let people make their own choices, because you can't make a proper choice when your consciousness is low, and you can't make a big mistake when your consciousness is high.
And, you know, also I should add, because it's important, there's a wide variety of lifestyles and economic levels within the community. No one checks about what you have in your bank account. There are people here that are quite wealthy and have built large, beautiful homes. There are people here who may have more money but have built very modest homes. And there are people here with, you know, so it's a great, who have chosen consciously to live very, very simply. And so it really, there's no kind of model or pattern that everyone has to fit into. Some people are married, have children. Some people have chosen to remain single and have a life that's just with less outward responsibilities. And so there's an extreme level of freedom of individual choice and self-determination. And it makes such a rich, rich community, because you learn from everyone. You look and can enjoy and appreciate everything, all the different choices of life. And yet underlying, there's the common values of cooperation and harmony, integrity, God-centered life. And so I think it's very rich to have all these many different expressions of the same underlying values.
And I think when we look at all of that, which you just shared, and this is huge and this is important, and this, I would say, is why Paramahansa Yogananda felt that this would be the precedence model, in a sense, for where we're headed. Because that piece of individuality has to be kept available for people.
Yes,
I think,
and
for
once you get it picked up by the right string, so that you allow people the freedom of choice, but you encourage in a gentle way altruism and compassion and higher values. Once you begin to have a community of people like that, then it's like a feedback system where good attitudes and good examples spawn other right attitudes and examples. And so in our community now there are about 225 people. And I would say that I certainly would consider everyone here to be a friend. And in most ways, I would say I would consider everyone here to be a teacher. For me personally, that there's something I have to learn from everyone, and yet I suppose Davy and I would be considered the leaders of the community, but not in the sense that we have all the answers. Everybody has a piece of the puzzle and something that they can offer. And living in a community where you live close enough with other people to see the examples, where you see that a person who is altruistic is happier in the long run than people who are thinking about themselves. It's one thing to have that as a mental concept. It's quite another to see 50 or 60 examples that prove that to you on a deep and abiding level.
And, you know, expanding beyond that, we have communities throughout the world. We have in America, in Seattle, Washington, Portland, Oregon, here at Ananda Village outside of Nevada City, Sacramento, California, Palo Alto. We have a very active center in Los Angeles. And, you know, each of these is involved with anywhere from 50 to several hundred people. We also have a work that's developing in Mexico. We have many active centers there and developing a retreat center. We have a wonderful international community in Assisi, Italy, and we have two communities in India, one in the north outside of Delhi and one in the south outside of Pune, India. But it's that same principle that we've been talking about of individual determination, self-determination, because if we had just said, this is how we've done things at Ananda Village, and this is how it has to be, whether it's Portland, Oregon, or Assisi, Italy, or Monterrey, Mexico, it wouldn't work. Because every area, even different cities in America, there's a different consciousness of the people who live there, and they want that their work, their community to evolve with the underlying values, but the expression may be different. And when we began our work community in Italy, we really had to let the Italians, even though we had, you know, experience in building communities, we had to let the Italians guide us and say, what will work in your culture? What will work in a basically Catholic country? What will work in a society that isn't as mobile as America is and more kind of traditional family-based where people don't leave the cities they were born in? So, you know, for our work to be applicable universally or at least globally, we have to really respect the many, many different expressions and cultures and political environments that exist in the world. Right now, interestingly enough, we have a very strong interest in China. And a woman there had a dream, a woman who had no background in these teachings, she had a dream of Paramahansa Yogananda telling her to come to Ananda and to bring these teachings back to China. And so she's been going to our Ananda group outside in Singapore, now we're going to start sending some teachers to China. And so what I'm saying essentially is you start from a core set of values, and then within the community, any particular community, you let the individuals express their own inner reality and truth. And then from community to community, you let it evolve. And it really, it's an expression of a new, that in itself is a teaching, instead of just everything has to be this way, to trust in the inherent wisdom and integrity of every area, of every individual, and let it flower and develop according to its own sense of truth.
And I think this is an important thing because there's a thought out there that the truth is able to adapt and adjust to the time, to the culture, to place, to situations. It doesn't mean that it changes, but it's able to fit in.
That's right.
And
yeah, it's absolutely true.
I think that's very key in this. The foundation stayed the same, but it's got to be flexible enough to fit in wherever it is.
Yeah, the core values can stay the same, but the way that those core values are expressed has to be able to be flexible. For instance, with your work with compassion, compassion is an extremely important attitude and way to live. But the way that compassion is expressed from society to society or from individual to individual, that needs to be flexible. But the core value of compassion needs to be universal. Same with many core values. Being honest is a core value. Being kind is a core value. Being having energy is a core value. Being calm and peaceful is a core value. So there are many core values, and if you find the practices, and we have the practices of meditation and the teachings of Eastern spirituality of yoga to bring those core values up to the surface in our consciousness, then those core values, as I say, are universal. But the way that they are expressed needs to be individual and flexible.
Yes, and I find this very exciting where it's expanding and that Ananda's been able to do this in the way that they have and the structure that they have. We were talking a little bit as well about the children, and David, you mentioned that your son felt like he had an amazing upbringing in there. And one of the things is I know that Ananda has its own schools everywhere from very young, working with children, all the way through college. And they structure in a very interesting way that is in flow with the natural cycles of children and how they learn and how they develop. And that's very interesting because I think there's so many people that think, oh my gosh, those kids are in the schools, they're probably being brainwashed, they probably have all this religion going down their throats and these sorts of things. But from what I observed from the film Finding Happiness is that it actually allows the children much more flexibility to be themselves and to learn in a natural flow of their own cycles.
Yes, we have a wonderful school system here that was conceptualized by our founder, Swami Kriyananda. And it's based on a book he wrote called Education for Life. And it's really, there are many points that we could touch on, but it's not religion-based. It's based on character development. And we look at each individual child, and we try to look at directional development for that child and what is their next step. And Swami talks about three stages or three levels. One is kind of the self-interest. One is egoactive or heavy, egoactive, and light. And the heavy quality, let's say somebody is very, just wants to sit and play video games. And so then for that child, the next step is to get them active in something that's, hey, do you want to do a car wash and we'll earn money and then we can go and buy a new video game, whatever it might be. And then the third level is to the light level, where you're really trying to expand their awareness and get them to be more interested in serving others. But so you're working with that directional flow of energy, not putting children in a box, but looking at what their next steps are. And we also, Swami Kriyananda, observed that there are different stages or different levels of development at different points in a child's life. As up till about 6 years old, they're learning to get control over their body, to you know, all the different skills we need. And then from 6 to 12, they talk about getting control of the emotions and learning to have emotional discipline and control. And then they go on to finally get control of the intellect and the mind and develop values. So to try to move, again, it's looking not we need you to follow our beliefs, but more who is this child? We look at every child in the school as far as their individual development. What is their next step? And the children, our son, for example, he was not particularly interested in our spiritual practices, but very interested in values and integrity and doing the right thing and acting in a way to serve others. And that's what he's carried on into his life. And so it's, and he has said to us, I've never, as an adult, he said, I never felt a need, even though I observed you doing it, for spiritual practices in my life. But if I ever get to a point where I want that in my life, I will choose what you've been doing because you never tried to push it on me. And so we've always tried to respect the growing individual in the child, know that each child, even though it's a younger physical body than we are, that's a soul in that child. And that soul comes with lifetimes of much, much richness of experience and awareness. And it's not up to us to mold them and force them into our beliefs, but to rather show them to develop their own strengths and try to overcome their own weaknesses, but more important, to give them the confidence to make their own right choices for what's appropriate for them. And it's been very successful. The children that have been born and raised at Ananda or those who have come through our school system are really quite remarkable people.
One of the fears of some people is that, oh, this is kind of sweet and nice and a little bit airy-fairy and, oh, yes, you can be nice to children, but they have to be put to the test. How do they function in the world with this? Well, for one thing, the children from our school system test year after year in the 98th, 99th percentile of all the children tested in America. And many of the children, because our school is relatively small, have chosen to go to the local high school, which is a large high school because it services a whole county, so 2,500 students in that school. And in many cases, not just one, but several cases, the children coming out of our little 30 or 40 student school have become valedictorians in that large 2,500 student school. But almost universally, the teachers say these children are so much more mature than the rest of the students that are around them. And they say that because the students are centered. The Ananda students have found their own core values, and they're centered in that. and they aren't kind of just pushed around by all the fads and social pressures.
Just to correct, there are more than 30 or 40 children in our schools. There's about at the school in Mondeville.
I love that you brought these factors in, because, you know, I think that is a question for a lot of people. Well, how do these kids function once they go out into the so-called real world out there?
Yeah.
And I love, Jyotish, that you brought in the aspect where these kids are really taught to make their own decisions versus in a lot of the public school systems, they're taught to follow. They're taught to follow what they're taught to not think for themselves. And, you know, as you say, some people might think there's an airy-fairy approach, but when a child is taught to think for themselves, to make their own choices, to make their own decisions, and to say, this is what's right for me, they're going to do a lot better in the world because they're not going to be influenced by people out there.
I was just reading a beautiful essay that one of the girls in the Ananda High School wrote. Every year we take the high school and junior high school students, if they're interested, on a field trip to an orphanage in Mexico. One of the mothers of one of our members here actually was from Hispanic ancestry and grew up in that orphanage, which is run by the Catholic Church. She subsequently moved to the United States, but she knows the priests and nuns of this particular orphanage. And so we bring the children there. They go for, they learn Spanish at school during the school year, and then they go for 2 weeks, and they live there in the orphanage with the children. I went 1 year as one of the adult chaperones, and it's an amazing experience. I mean, there are several hundred children in this orphanage, and our children go, and they work all year, both learning Spanish. And also we have a little thrift store that the children run. And throughout the year, they earn their money for the trip by working in the little thrift store. And if they find clothes and toys, they save it for these children. And so when we went down, each child had two suitcases, one of their own stuff and one of clothes and toys for the orphans. But I read this essay just about a week ago that one of the girls wrote. She's, I think, about 16 or 17 years old, but she talked about her experiences, and she said it was so humbling to see these children who had nothing and had no parents, had nothing of their own, but how they found they were happy, they were kind to others, they weren't just thinking of themselves. And she just said, this girl who wrote it said, I've never even left my own home before. I've lived with my family and had everything I needed all my life. And I became friends with a girl my own age who had no mother and father. They had both died. And she, you know, really didn't have anything, any security in her life. But still, I learned from her, and we became friends. And now we're going to be pen pals. And you know, just to give students that experience of seeing the world from another perspective. And that's, again, what the Ananda communities are trying to do and what's shown in the film Finding Happiness that is based on the Ananda community experience. By the way, we should say Ananda, which is the name of our communities, it's from an Indian word, a Sanskrit word that means joy. And so that's the name of the communities. But that's part of what the purpose behind it is, to let people see from a different pair of eyes than the world, the, quote, real world. We so often people say to us, well, you know, but in the real world, and you know, this world is, the world of Ananda communities is, believe me, every bit as real as any other world. Maybe if you define real world as something that's, you know, fast-paced and tense and hostile and angry and competitive and greedy. No, none of those things are here. But is that real? I question that.
And if we look at what is real, I think Ananda is much closer to that than what we call our real world. And I'm glad you brought up the meaning of Ananda, because that was something I was going to have you bring out for people. I think it's one of those things, again, it's important for people to understand where that comes from. I so agree that this aspect of doing this work that the teenagers do and that age range does is so important. I wish we had more of that in our own public school systems, because my experience is so many of the kids at that age are thinking, oh, I don't have anything, or I don't have this, or I don't have that. And when they get down to a situation like that and they're living in it and they're seeing, wow, I really do have a lot. I really do have many things, and I didn't realize how good I had it. So I think the kids and the people I've known along the way that have had those experiences around those ages of being able to help somebody else and things, it seems like they go on to be much more concerned about humanity.
It's very important. One of the ideals of our educational system is that during the teenage years especially, those are the years in which human beings develop their willpower. And so from 12 until 18, we call the will years. And so either you challenge the will and direct it in a positive direction, such as altruism or helping other people or even sports, you know, anything that challenges the will but is kind of a way of directing it in an upward or productive way is going to train the person for the rest of their life that they can use their decision-making power to do something right. And as they do that, they just find out that their worldview is expanded, that they're happier, and ultimately they're more productive and successful.
Yes. And I think that is just a huge point with it. And I should point out that an interesting thing about Ananda, because there are those old stereotypes, especially, you know, when you think back to the 70s and even the 80s a little bit. But, you know, you think back over the years and people have that concept, oh, it's a bunch of, you know, hippies that went out there and, you know, that founded these things. And I'm breaking a lot of these myths with you tonight, so I appreciate your patience with that, because I think it's important to break these stereotypes and these myths that people have. And one of the things I learned in watching the film Finding Happiness was you have an amazing wealth of resources in the people that are a part of these communities. I mean, highly educated, highly skilled people. And we're not talking like, oh, okay, this person gets a good idea every now and then. I mean, you, Jyotish, come from a very educated background. As you mentioned, I believe it was psychology. You've got David, who's very involved in the Ananda Ensemble, who has this fantastic music background. I know there's other people that were mentioned in the film, and I apologize for not remembering everybody's names, but that actually are in the process of developing various aspects of solar power techniques, horticulturists, authors that have talked about nature. I mean, you've got some, what I would consider in a way, high profile, very highly educated, well-skilled people that are choosing to be a part of this community.
Well, I think it's natural if you have an environment that is idealistic in many ways. It draws people to live here who are of high ideals. And then we're very creative, and we encourage and sponsor creativity in others, so that allows their creative energies to flow. And then you've got an environment that is mutually supportive for everybody. And so even like an entrepreneurial energy, even if a person is working to start their own business, they've got a whole network of advisors and friends and support and even financial resources that they can call on. So as Yogananda put it, if you have a village of 1,000 people, if everyone considers themselves to be each other's friends, every person has 999 friends. If they're competitors and enemies, everyone has 999 enemies or competitors. And we just choose to have the first, have friendship and mutual support be the norm rather than the competition and mistrust and negativity.
You know, I think it's also helpful to point out that an environment which is harmonious and peaceful and where you're not having to drain off a lot of your energy with dealing with negative emotions and competitiveness, it produces great creativity in the individuals. They can focus all that energy in writing or painting or composing or horticulture and the arts and so forth. So I think just as, you know, in the Renaissance, in the city of the Italian Renaissance in Florence, it was just a very small group of people really that redefined Western art, but it was such a creative environment, such high energy and focus of purpose that, you know, geniuses emerged that if they had been living on their own separately in different cities, they may not have risen to that same level of greatness. So the environment really is conducive to that kind of greatness. And, you know, far from being, as you pointed out, the image of kind of laid-back hippies, the part of the practice of meditation, part of our lifestyle, creates great mental clarity and energy and focus that leads to the ability to produce many things. So I think part of the fulfillment for all of us who have lived here for any number of years is the association with interesting, intelligent, dynamic people. Just this afternoon, a friend who is the leader of our community in Portland, Oregon, he's visiting here now at the Ananda Village in California. He came over and we just had an interesting and stimulating conversation about the history of America and the founding fathers. And I was just thinking how wonderful it is to be able to converse with others in a stimulating way, in interesting, where you're learning things. It isn't just complaining about other people or gossiping or you know, kind of a lower level of conversation. So just to speak to the point that you made about kind of hippies and dropouts, not at all. I think these communities, my experience in watching them grow over the years, it attracts people of high intelligence, high energy, and extreme creativity.
I'm so glad that you brought that out, because I had actually done some research in college about how the natural environment increases our senses and how it can literally restore our body and various things, particularly our eyesight and hearing and things like that. And you brought up such a good point that this type of environment is so conducive to bringing out that creator energy in people. And it's so true, because when we don't have the stresses and we don't have the tensions around us and we're not living in this fear wondering who's trying to break into our house or who's trying to stab us in the back for something, and we live in this loving vibration, we really have that ability to bring our potential out. We really have that ability to tap into the creative energy, because there's what I refer to as being given a space of safety. And when safety is the foundation for all development to come into us being able to connect with divine will. If we don't feel safe, going to draw on support and love and other things.
It's so true. You know, the kind of 25 years ago, the cutting edge of medicine and science began talking about the mind-body connection. And at that time, it was just dismissed as some airy-fairy theory. But over the past 25 years, now basically there probably is not a physician in America that doesn't accept the fact that thoughts and attitudes and behaviors affect physical health. And what we're going to find increasingly over the next decades ahead is that consciousness is the predecessor for everything. It's the predecessor for physical health. It's the predecessor for success. Proper attitudes will produce health. Proper attitudes will produce success. And conversely, negative attitudes and negative patterns are going to produce not only unhealthy people, but also unsuccessful people. And so if you start inside with the methods, we use a lot of meditation, and meditation focusing. There are many, many thousands of studies now showing positive brain changes, positive immune system changes, positive health changes that come from the practice of meditation. And over the next two or three decades, one of the cutting edges of science and medicine is going to show how important it is to have practices that reduce stress and increase peace and harmony and a sense of inner integrity, and that will lead to a much more positive life.
It's interesting you bring that up, because about a year ago I had somebody interviewing me, and they had pulled some research of actual statistics of what happens physically in the body when people act compassionately. And, you know, mm-hmm. it actually showed these different aspects with our serotonin levels and things like that. And actually just, I think it was 2 days ago or yesterday, I had received an email from somebody where they had found another research study on the effects of people who live compassionate lives and do compassionate acts, and how it actually strengthens them, mind, body, and spirit, and that listening and that ability to be in that space opened people up intellectually, mentally, and these various things. So the studies are coming out now. I don't even think we're going to have to wait decades, because they're not in motion.
Probably not. I was just reading a study last week about there's a Nobel laureate who is working on this, but it's about the effect of meditation on one side, or being under unreasonable stress on the other side, that changes something in the DNA structure called telomeres. And that's where, when there's a splitting of DNA, the kind of capping mechanism are this molecule or this segment called telomeres, and that stress makes them continually get shorter and shorter and shorter, which they now think is one of the main factors of aging, whereas meditation has shown to stabilize and in some cases even begin to increase those telomeres. And what we know from our actual experience is that we operate a clinic that has about 5,000 or 6,000 patients. So not only the Ananda community, but many, many people that would be demographically more or less the same. But our doctors are finding that the people from Ananda are about 10 years younger than their chronological age. And in comparison to the other patients as a group, the Ananda people have all over the map better health, better mental health, better physical health, less medication needed when they do need medication of some sort, and just many, many, many objective, measurable proofs that working on your consciousness also affects very positively your health.
And also, speaking of compassion, I read a true story that took place in Germany after the Second World War, when the Allied troops were coming into the concentration camps, and they found one man there who was very vibrant and healthy and looked in much better shape than any of the other inmates who were all kind of dying and very, very ill. And they asked him, and he spoke English as well as German, so he served as an interpreter, and they asked him to if he would translate, and he was working with them. And then they asked him, well, you must have come to the camps relatively recently because you look in such good health after seeing the other patients. And he said, the other inmates, and he said, no, actually, I was one of the first people brought to this camp. But as soon as I came, I tried, even if I had a little bit of food, I would share it with someone else. And I tried to help the others and encourage them and give them hope and give them support. And they said they were just amazed because he looked noticeably different than the other inmates of that camp. So, again, the practice of compassion can make a huge difference in our lives.
It really is amazing, and I'm so excited to see these stories and this research coming out on it. Now, before we have to wrap up here, I do want to mention, if I'm understanding correctly, and maybe you can help me with this, that people can go and visit at Ananda, do retreats for like meditation and yoga there. Is that correct? They can go and
Absolutely.
Stay like a week?
Yes, we have a meditation teaching and retreat center called The Expanding Light. So they can Google it or just go on ananda.org. But we have classes going on all the time. We have thousands of people a year that visit from around the world, and they come here either for personal retreats or they take courses, many courses that we have. For instance, we have a yoga teacher training course, so people who want to learn how to become yoga teachers can come and study that. But we have dozens of courses and ways that people can come and stay and be a part of the community. So ananda.org is the gateway for all of that information.
And, you know, you can stay for as long as you like, for a few days. You can take a week-long program. You can take we have month-long programs. We have work exchange programs that go on for several months. And I do want to add something, a new program that we just have started that we're very excited about. There's a new field that's emerging called yoga therapy. and it's actually been approved by different medical practitioners as a valid way of using meditation and yoga to treat certain illnesses. And they just, there is a national board of yoga therapists, and they just approved, many people applied to be certified, many yoga centers, and they only approved 10 centers in the United States and 2 internationally, and the Expanding Light is one of the 10 centers in the United States that has certification to offer courses in yoga therapy. So we're very excited about that.
That is incredibly exciting, and I did want to bring that up because here we are talking about this wonderful community, and I think for people to know that they have the opportunity that they could just go and do a short little retreat and just recenter and refocus themselves, even if they're not specifically of this spiritual system or belief practice, and that also if they're interested in immersing into the community a little bit and getting a stronger experience. I'm so glad you brought up the work programs there, because it really gives people that opportunity to say, hey, is this a lifestyle for me, or do I fit in with this particular community or that particular community? Because one location, I'm sure each one of them is a little bit different in that sense, but just because the people are different at each one there. And I think it's a great option for people, and I'm just glad that you have that available and that people know that they can do that.
Yeah, it's really life-transforming for people.
Do you have any closing thoughts that you would like to leave our listeners with?
I would say just this, that realize that your own happiness is under your control. Live to be happy and try to help others also be happy. And if you do that, everything will begin to fall into place.
And I would also say that compassion is one of the most powerful tools for finding this happiness, to think of others, as we were saying, but to look at the world around us and see the confusion and the suffering and respond with compassion, with giving. And I think if we can just as a global family begin to approach all the problems in the world with compassion and forgiveness, that we will see the dawn of a new age on our planet.
I completely agree with what both of you have said, and it is such a pleasure to have had you here. I am so glad we could take a look at the Ananda community, the film Finding Happiness. Again, if people want to check these out, ananda.org, or on the film itself, Finding Happiness, you can go to findinghappinessmovie.com, and you'll be able to get the information on the movie itself there. And I believe that's got the information for purchasing it and everything. And it's just a really, really wonderful display. And I appreciate your time. I appreciate your energy, your thoughts, your input tonight, and helping me bring this beautiful community to light so that people can see that these stereotypes are not what it's all about, but that there are beautiful foundations out there that are being set for what can certainly create a much better world.
Well, we very, very much appreciate the evening, being able to chat with you and your help in bringing this out, because the world needs light, and it's nice for all of us who would like to share light to be able to help each other.
Jesse, thank you so much for your, it's been a joy talking with you, and we just felt like we could go on for a long time, like we're just having a conversation of like-minded people, and we wish you all the best with the wonderful work that you're doing, and we hope that all your listeners, either live or in a recorded session, will gain a lot of benefit from all the goodness that you're putting out into the world.
Well, thank you so much, and truly, truly, again, a pleasure to have you here, and who knows, I just may show up for a retreat one of these days.
Well, you should definitely plan on it.
And please let us know if you're coming so we can be sure to host you.
I so very much appreciate it, and thank you again. And we have been talking tonight with Devi and Jyotish Novak, which are from the Ananda community, also associated with Finding Happiness, the movie. You can check that out at findinghappinessmovie.com or go to ananda.org, and it's got all their locations and everything listed there. And just such a gift and such a pleasure. And if you've missed any part of this, you want to go back because they shared some beautiful stories here, some beautiful talks, and we really looked at how this community is setting a precedence and an example for some future possibilities that we're moving into. Next week, I have Margaret Rogers Van Koops, and we will be looking at why we live on Earth and what happens when we die. I have released several events for 2014. The events I have going on are based in nature, and they are conscious building events, and they're really kind of custom catered to whoever shows up at those events and whoever participates in them. You can find out more about that at jessieannnicholsgeorge.eventbrite.com. Check those out. The Autumn Equinox event will be in Seattle, Washington, and right now it is looking like the event the first couple of days of November is going to be back on the East Coast, possibly around the New Jersey area. So you want to stay on top of those and see how they're going to come around. And July special deal that I have running, I have free courses being offered right now on chakras, also a free course on compassion, and free courses on building harmony in your life. And you can learn more about those on my website, jessieannnicholsgeorge1.com. You'll also find on there, again, archived shows, find ways to connect with me, video tips that I have on there, all kinds of different things, as well as all the shows for Main Street Universe and little write-ups about our host and the different hosts and the different shows that we have there, which, by the way, we do have several shows here on Main Street Universe throughout the week. Sunday nights we have Darren Bouquer, who's a reader at Madame Laveau in New Orleans, doing spiritual insights. Monday nights we have Randy Goldberg doing Vedic astrology. Tuesdays is Susan Weed, absolute incredible wealth of knowledge, where she shares her work in herbs and natural plants. Wednesday nights we have Daniel, Janice, and Brett on our flagship show called Main Street Universe. And definitely want to check that out. They had Reverend Tiffany on this past Wednesday, and she's just such a beautiful light and a beautiful soul, so it's always worth tuning into that. And sometimes they're talking about topics, sometimes it's guests. Thursday's Queen Mother Amaku, and she's doing a show called Wise Woman Renegade. Fridays, oftentimes, Kevin Baird is working with his Horizon Oracles Journeys deck, which he created. You can learn more about that at templeofgaia.com. And, of course, Friday nights is Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. This is Jessieann Nicholsgeorge, and I want to thank you so much for being here tonight. And, again, thank you not only to all of our live listeners here on Blog Talk Radio, but those streaming live through PEN, known as Prayer Encounters Network, StreamFinder, and TalkStream Live, as well as those catching our podcast at iTunes and TuneIn.com, and those catching the YouTube version of our show. I definitely look forward to seeing you back here next week as we delve more into activating compassion. And don't forget, if you've enjoyed my show this evening, share it with others. I mean, we got a wealth of information and some really great insights about how we can make a difference in the world tonight. And it's going to be available at the same link in our archives. And I'm going to be leaving you with two songs done by the Ananda Ensemble and from the film Finding Happiness. And the first one is called Ananda Village. The second one will be called Go With Love. And thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you again next week right here on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. May you enjoy the rest of your weekend and have an absolutely amazing week.